Thank you to the founding sponsor of Undivided, 1530 Mortgage. Visit them at 1530mortgage.com. Today on the Undivided podcast, trying to take on the fringes is exhausting, but totally worth it. Plus, there's plenty of blame to go around following a pause of non-urgent surgeries.
The governor is really messing with a lot of people's lives in ways far beyond simple medical procedures.
And finally, are Democrats hopelessly lost without Donald Trump? What I predicted back in November of 2020, and what's happening right now that may back it up. Welcome to the Undivided Podcast. I'm Brandi Cruz. Thanks for being here. Oh, it's Monday. I've got the Mondays today. There's every once in a while where I'm sure this is true for any of you who believe in our mission, and that's to really stand up to woke culture, attack culture, outrage culture, extremism, hyperpartisanship. It can be a really exhausting place to be. And some days I definitely feel that. I don't know why it's getting to me today, but you know, I think that being in this space, it isn't always easy because you can feel like you're just sort of screaming into an abyss or just on an island alone. And you know, one of the things I've said is that people on the far left, the only people they hate more than the far right are moderates. And for people on the far right, the only thing they hate more than the far left are moderates. And for that reason, you kind of can feel very ganged up on at times. And for the most part, you know, I don't really let it bother me because I believe in the mission. I believe in what we're trying to accomplish. I believe in the message that we're trying to spread. But that doesn't mean it's not difficult at times, you know, when you put so much energy into a message that you believe in and a movement that you believe in, and you're just constantly being torn down by the fringes. And, you know, I said at the beginning of this that this was political coverage for the anti-fringe and that sometimes it wasn't going to be pretty. And, you know, sometimes we were going to go after the fringes aggressively and, you know, they were probably going to respond in kind, and they do, and they always have. I think why it's getting to me today, I did this, I don't know if you watched the Sunday digital show that we put out on YouTube, Undivided with Brandi Cruz, but I did this, what I really thought was, I didn't think it would be a very controversial segment. Of course, you guys heard of the woke M&Ms, M&M rebranding. It's candy spokespeople to be more of a focus on their personality as opposed to their gender, which it's just, you know, it's a publicity stunt, it's marketing, and it's basically just a corporation trying to prove that they're woke. And the point that I was trying to make is that conservative commentators got all bent out of shape about this. Woke culture gone wild. It was a favorite topic of Tucker Carlson. And the point of my segment was not to be outraged over it. It was to try to point out that we've found ourselves at this place in society where, for whatever reason, even some of the largest companies in the world are so focused on these performative acts to try to show that they are inclusive, that they care about everyone, as opposed to what I always thought mattered most, which is how you treat people when no one is watching. You know, it's like everyone wants to be seen doing good things. They want to be seen being inclusive and woke, I mean, for lack of a better word, where, you know, the energy put into rebranding these stupid candy cartoons could have been put into actually making the world a better place. You've got this culture on the internet where it's like, you have to prove how woke you are. You have to prove it or we don't believe you. Where for most of us, I think in our day-to-day lives, we just go about treating people with respect, being inclusive, being understanding, and just trying every day to be good people. And that is enough. It should be enough, and it is enough. But as I pointed out in the commentary, you know, you're expected to say the right things publicly, post the right things publicly, participate in the hashtags, change your profile picture, apologize if you're white, apologize if you're rich. And if you don't do those things, then you're just vilified. And I don't think it's a radical idea to think that you don't have to do those things to be a good person. You don't have to put on a public performance to show that you're a good person. And that was the entire intent of this commentary. And you just would not believe the amount of hate I got over this really simple message. Like, how about we just treat each other with respect and not try to get points for making candy cartoons more gender neutral? people. And it's really not a surprise that it was people who were on the left fringe who were like, oh, is this what you're focusing on today? Rage over M&M candies? It's like, no, that's exactly the opposite of what I'm trying to say, which is that we can't just be outraged at some candy company, you know, making M&Ms gender neutral. We should be upset that we've created a society and fostered a society where you have to prove how inclusive you are, as opposed to just going about your day-to-day lives like a good human being. But apparently, suggesting that you should focus on doing things without being desperate for attention is just too much for some people on Twitter to handle. Anyway, so that was just my rant of what has me annoyed today. I think sometimes, you know, you put so much effort into just trying to get people to be reasonable. And there's things like that that are like, oh my gosh, this is such a hard task. It feels nearly impossible some days. But the show must go on. I wanted to take some time to talk a little bit about some folks that we heard from on the show on Sunday. I played a little bit of their interviews on the podcast Friday, but one of the really interesting things, so I talked to three people whose lives have been impacted by the halt on non-urgent procedures that Governor Jay Inslee has put into place until February the 17th in Washington State. There are some guidelines in the order to help medical centers decide what's urgent and not urgent. But as you can imagine, that is sometimes going to be in the eye of the beholder. And for somebody who's waiting on a surgery that they desperately need, who might be in pain, who might have been quarantining for weeks so that they could go do their surgery and be healthy, this has an immense impact on them. And so I played interviews with three people, one of them, Shannon, who's waiting for a reconstructive surgery after a double mastectomy following a battle with breast cancer.
I did not elect to have my breasts amputated per se. Like, it was just something that needed to be done. And so I did it. Why is choosing to have them reconstructed or somewhat put back together, why is that now elective?
I also spoke with Debbie, whose husband is awaiting surgery to remove his cancer.
I mean, at some point, it's going to impact his health. The thing is that he's not the only one. Mm-hmm. There are hundreds, maybe thousands of people waiting for needed surgeries.
And finally, I spoke with Hank, who was in constant pain, needed a hip replacement surgery.
I'm basically immobile. I spend 23 hours a day, either in bed or in my comfortable office chair. I can't really move around much. It's very painful.
And I am happy to report that Hank was able to appeal the decision to put off his surgery to his medical provider. And he's actually in surgery today. So I'm hoping that goes well for him. But one of the things I just wanted to follow up on today is I found it interesting that, and very in keeping with the theme of Undivided, that each of these three individuals had different thoughts on who they blame for the situation that they find themselves in. And it wasn't all about the governor. You know, I think it's easy to put blame on the governor for making the decision and putting down the mandate from his desk. And you know, I'm not saying people who blame the governor are wrong, but it seemed like from these conversations, there was a lot of frustration to go around. For instance, Shannon said, yeah, there was frustration with the governor, but also she really felt as if her medical provider should be trying harder to make her surgery happen.
They should know what canceling this type of a procedure means to a patient, both physically and mentally. And it's kind of frustrating to get that phone call to say, well, we're canceling your surgery. And unfortunately, our next opening is not until November 8th.
In Debbie's case, you know, Debbie's a lifelong Republican. And I think when it comes to vaccinations, we know that there has been more vaccine hesitancy on the right, but also I think more frustration on the right about vaccine mandates. And her frustration was really with the unvaccinated.
I think people should do what it takes for their community, for their society, for their small town, for their big city. I mean, for their neighbor. And getting vaccinated is one of the simplest things that somebody can do to protect themselves and their way of life. And it is the unvaccinated who are taking up the hospital beds in the hospital right now.
And Hank, you know, Hank did really feel frustration with the governor because he felt as if these decisions should be left in the hands of hospitals.
He is causing the whole medical establishment to go back and re-examine all of its issues and all of its concerns. So whatever my doctors decide, whatever my hospitals decide, I will abide by that. But it's not fun being me right now.
And so if you're interested in listening to these conversations, I just think it's a good holistic look at the issue because, you know, I think on the left, the tendency is to blame the unvaccinated. On the right, the tendency is to blame the governor, when in reality, there is probably some blame to share for the situation that we find ourselves in hospitals. You know, obviously the number of COVID cases, we know that unvaccinated people are more likely to be hospitalized, but also vaccine mandates that resulted in hospital staff being terminated or deciding to leave their jobs voluntarily. And so it was like this perfect storm of unfortunate circumstances that led to these people who are in desperate need of these procedures being told that they have to wait. And I think we can all agree that it's deeply unfair to them to be in this situation. By now, I'm sure you've seen my commercials for the founding sponsor of Undivided, 1530 Mortgage, and I wanted to tell you a little bit more about them. 1530 Mortgage stands for the 15 and 30 year mortgage, and the 1530 Mortgage Act stands for accountability, communication, time, and transparency. Find out more at 1530mortgage.com or call 206-207-7777. 1530 Mortgage, NMLS number 1761573, Equal Housing Opportunity. I saw this column in the Seattle Times by Danny Westneat, and it just stuck out to me because I predicted this, okay? I predicted this, and I have the receipts, but let me just bring you up to date on this column. It's funny, Danny Westneat, Social City Councilwoman in Seattle, Shama Sawant, calls him a conservative, but he's not. So just keep that in mind as I read this. So the latest Danny Westneat column, the headline, Missing Trump? Democrats seem lost without him while the local GOP surges back from the dead. In this column, he talks about the latest poll from Stuart Elway. And he talks about the fact that, you know, Seattle just elected a Republican Seattle city attorney, Ann Davison, which is very odd, hasn't happened in the city in 30 years. And what he notes in this column is that the latest Elway poll shows a sharp increase in voters who identify as Republicans. Stuart Elway told Westneat, it's as big of a jump in party ID for one party as we've seen in 30 years I've been doing these surveys. And look, you know, Republicans, as Westneat points out, it kind of hit rock bottom in the Seattle area. So there really was nowhere down. It wasn't very far down for them to go. But this is a pretty big jump for them. Last year, only 18% of voters in the entire state said that they would identify as Republican, and that was the lowest it had ever been. But now, post-Donald Trump, 29% say they identify as Republican. That's 7 points behind the number who identify as Democrats. That's a pretty sizable bump. And look, when you have, you know, at least at the national level, when you've got all one party in power, we know, for instance, in the 2022 midterms, Republicans are expected to go very well. That's just the ebb and flow of the political system. So you would expect some increase. But 11 points is quite a bit. And look, there's a lot going on. You've got Omicron. Joe Biden is just gaff city. Inflation. Issues with the supply chain. And you combine all of that with the fact that, you know, Democrats are in power and that's just how things go, is the out-of-power party just tends to do better in off-year elections. And so you kind of start to see where that's all building. But this column also touches on the fact that Democrats in Washington state seem to be a little discombobulated. They're spending an awful lot of energy this legislative session trying to fix things that they just passed because those things aren't popular. The long-term care tax has been put on pause. They're trying to fix some of the just disastrous police reform bills that they passed last year. They're starting to relent on the issue of emergency power reform, which is something they wouldn't even touch last year. So Democrats have just been sort of all out of sorts. And Danny Westneat offered an opinion in his column about why. He wrote, I've got a theory about all of this. Democrats are lost without Donald Trump. He goes on to write, he was the Death Star around which they could organize their feisty resistance. Without that, they're wandering. At the national level, they're in leaderless combat between factions of the party, with Seattle Representative Pramila Jayapal storming from the left and West Virginia Senator Joe Manchin hunkering down in the center. He goes on to write, it never occurred to Jayapal and Manchin to go at one another back when they had Trump. Now, before I get to the conclusion of Danny Wesney's article, this is something that I talked about right after the 2020 presidential election. One thing that became painfully obvious as a political reporter in Washington State is the constant blaming of former President Donald Trump for basically everything wrong that was going on. And in a way, they used him as a scapegoat to distract from some of the profound challenges we were facing here that existed long before Donald Trump became president. Here's a commentary that I aired on November 29th, 2020, in my old job at Fox TV.
Leaders in our state will lose the one thing preventing them from accepting responsibility for their own problems.
The president, Donald Trump.
The president.
The president,
Donald Trump.
Donald Trump.
The president,
Donald Trump.
Now look, it's fine. Leaders here can certainly take issue with things President Trump has said and done. He is ideologically very different from elected leaders like our governor and the mayor of Seattle, just to name a few. And as such, our state has fought the Trump administration both in court and in the court of public opinion on many, many issues. Travel bans, immigration, family separation, climate change, healthcare, CHAZ, CHOP, protests that won't stop, election security, mail-in voting, education, transgender rights, birth control, gun control, the Supreme Court, the census, and of course, the coronavirus. Now, fighting with the president is all well and good, but when you have active crises in your state that existed before that president, you do need to do a little introspection as well, like on the issue of homelessness, something that no leader in our state can blame on the outgoing administration. They can talk about how cruel and careless President Trump is, but one of the wealthiest cities in America leaving people to suffer on its streets doesn't seem all that caring, does it? And of course, there is the deteriorating state of downtown Seattle. Leaders bent on taxing high-paying jobs, defunding police, letting rioters run rampant, as well as essentially legalizing drug use and turning our mental health system into a revolving door. Leaders here can attack President Donald Trump all they want. But once he's gone, so is their favorite scapegoat. And for the first time in 4 years, they will come face to face with the problems they ignored while focusing so much energy on the occupant of the White House. And when they don't like what they see, Donald Trump will no longer be there to take the blame.
So again, that's a commentary I did a few weeks after Donald Trump lost the presidential election in 2020. I hate to say that I told you so. But absent Donald Trump, Democrats who rallied around their dislike for him, their hate for him, are now left staring the problems they ignored for so long, the problems they blamed on Donald Trump, right in the face. And as I predicted in November 2020, they don't like what they see. Danny Wesneed ended his column by writing, Trump's absence is reviving the Republicans who love him and want him back, and it's killing Democrats who hate him and hope he stays damaged goods forever. Both parties ought to orbit around something less poisonous, like agendas that they can actually pass. Until then, it's the oddest moment yet in our tribal politics, that it's Democrats who paradoxically may most need the unthinkable to happen, which is a Donald Trump come back. Now, I sure hope that Democrats don't require a spitting post or a lightning rod to be able to do their jobs. But if there's one thing that the last year has really shown Democrats, I hope, is that distracting from problems that they helped to create is only a short-term solution. Thank you so much for joining us on the Undivided Podcast and for your interest in giving common sense a comeback, as hard as that may feel some days. If you haven't become a subscriber already, please do so. I can't continue to do this work without you. You can become a paid subscriber for as little as $5 a month and get full access to all my video content, extended interviews, and more on Patreon, patreon.com/undivided. Or by becoming a supporter on my locals community, brandycruz.locals.com. I should also note that on both of those platforms, I do a monthly live Q&A with subscribers. And today is that day in January. Tonight at 7 p.m., I'm doing my first ever live Q&A on my locals page. And Because it's the first one, I'm going to open it up to anyone. So whether you're a paid subscriber on Locals or not, please tune in at 7 p.m. You can go to the page, click on the link, and ask me any question that you'd like. Again, that's brandycruz.locals.com. Now, if you're already a Fanatic, Ultra, or Presidential patron over on Patreon, we are doing a live exclusive Q&A tonight at 8 p.m. If you can't make it, make sure you log in and post a question ahead of time, and I'll make sure to answer it, and you can always watch the Q&A back. And if you want to be part of that, it's not too late to sign up to be a subscriber and to join us tonight, 8 p.m. Pacific time. Thank you to the founding sponsor of Undivided, 1530 Mortgage. You can visit them at 1530mortgage.com.